Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today's show, we're going to bring back a past guest, but has a lot of insight as to, I have in my hand, interestingly enough, a paper called A Comprehensive Tutorial on Data and Cybersecurity, put together by a good friend, Dr. Efren Ibrahim. I've always looked up to him as kind of sort of a mentor in the industry. He might be hearing this for the first time. As someone that has taken a lot of the same road that I have, that I can really look up to as a senior person, in even a mentor type role. But this paper was actually handed to me by a senator, even though I know Dr. Ibrahim well, it was handed to me by a senator that says, wow, you gotta check out this guy. So I bring Dr. Ibrahim on and say, welcome, thanks for coming back, thanks for agreeing, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, Chris. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so we're kind of looking today, taking a step back, and I want to, and this paper really says a lot of things about the industry, but to stop and look at kind of the importance of the digital world in general is really where you start, at that high level, and kind of moving down from there. I mean, think about it, 20 years ago, people weren't as relied on just digital for everything. I mean, everything we do is buried in the computer, or, you know, we're at work, we're working on a computer. How many people actually do something that isn't digital in today's world? It's a very few, very small number. Even more of the traditional manual skill sets are so based around technology that you can't separate the two. So what do you think, Dr. Ibrahim, as we move into this digital world and it becomes so important in our life, security has got to become a top role. So let's start at that point and let's hear your thoughts.
Yes, I agree with your initial proposition that cybersecurity is a critical issue when so much of the world today depends on digital transactions. But unlike many other subject matter experts in the industry, when interviewed, will tell you that the sky is falling and there's very little we can do. I am of the school of thought that there's plenty we can do and that we should not depart from our rational minds and start panicking, but rather approach it in a very methodical manner. And so this evening I want to outline some best practices in cybersecurity that if we adopt, we will be able to reach mature levels of maturity of cybersecurity, of its posture, without having to spend a lot of money and without confusing the issue. And I'm sorry to say that that particular perspective is very rare in the industry. Most people are defining the problem ad nauseum. And so I wanted to be an outlier in that dialogue and start showing you some constructive solutions.
Yes, and I think that's a big thing that we look for here, why we called it New Cyber Frontier. We want to look at the art of the possible. So that fits right in with our theme. And I know your background, many of you that might not know, is Dr. Ibrahim is one of the initial founders of the internet, working for back in the initial DARPANET connection, and then worked in energy now for the last 20 years. I think your doctorate's in nuclear engineering. So the your experience is so broad. Like I said, one of the reasons why I looked up to you as sort of a mentor type. But before we get into your approach, we're gonna take a break, hear from our sponsors, and come back and talk more to Efren. Be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier, broadcasting here from the Secure Set Academy, where they are nice enough to let us use their facility for a studio, and definitely a great place for everybody to check out. We have on with us today Dr. Erfan Ibrahim, who I was given a little background on before the break, has just been kind of like one of the founders of the whole technological era, working on some of the most base root projects in industry of the internet, even in its conception. But now, talking to us today, you have an approach, and I got a white paper handed to me from a senator saying, you gotta check this guy out. And very well respected. So tell us about now this approach that the sky's not falling. How do we move forward from, you know, the art of the possible?
Okay, so Chris says, many people keep hearing the concept of layered defense, defense in depth. These are all very lofty concepts, but then when you ask for the details, they're missing, or they'll tell you, oh, just put a firewall or just segment the network and you'll have that layered defense. But that's not how it works. So if you look at digital networks and ask yourself, how would you protect digital networks? It's not that different from physical security of valuable physical assets, whether it be a home or a museum or even the White House. Layered defense means that you create a series of hurdles for people to have to get across in order to get to whatever they're trying to get to, whether it is valuable assets or individuals. So just like you create those barriers in physical security, you need to do that for logical security or cybersecurity in digital networks. So there are four functional layers that I have outlined in the paper that you're referring to. The first one is what you would call authentication, authorization, all of that area. That's the first layer. So username and passwords, encryption, and various digital certificates for authentication, all of those fall in that category. And you need to have that as your first layer of defense against the outsiders. But they do very little for the insider threat. The insider threat could come in the form of a disgruntled employee, or it could be an advanced persistent threat that is pivoting from a trusted node that was vulnerable and now is launching an attack from within. It could also be industrial espionage rings or other nefarious organizations that may have a particular agenda. So those types of entities are not deterred by all these IT-centric security controls of authentication, authorization, encryption, because they already have those credentials and they can decrypt at will. They can go to all the places where that trusted node allows them to access. So then the second layer of defense is what I would call the intrusion detection, but of a signature kind. So that means that there's malware out there. The malware has signatures. After a few weeks, these IT experts, security experts, figure out a series of bits, a pattern with them, and when they see that pattern, they know that there's a particular kind of malware that is at work to either exfiltrate data or give them access to get into networks. So having intrusion detection that does signature-based intrusion detection and alarming is what I'd call the next layer of defense. Then the third layer of defense is what I call context-based intrusion detection. So beyond the signature, when the insider threat has deep domain expertise of the protocols, like SCADA protocols or other protocols for heating, ventilation, for energy management in a house, if those protocols have been compromised by an insider threat or someone who's pivoted from a trusted node, then you have to have intrusion detection that looks at the messaging that's going on in the various protocols and identifies anomalies based on bogus values on legit commands or bogus commands with legit values. Intrusion detection systems need to be able to see that within that protocol for that user, that particular set of commands or those values are not valid, and to alarm on that. And then the final frontier is what I'd call end security or edge device security, and that comes in multiple forms. It comes in the form of having tamper-resistant software on the edge device that alarms and says, I'm being tampered with, don't trust anything you're going to get from me. Or it's going to have a hypervisor, and that allows the hacker only to have access to that particular instance that is sitting in a virtual machine of an operating system and an application, and if it gets compromised, then you just swap that OS and that VM instance and put the last stable one with a simple script. So those are ways in which you can provide edge security and also some resilience to nefarious behaviors. Now, ultimately, the final frontier is what I would call security at the microprocessor level. I'm not talking about hardware-based security modules that are available from different vendors. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about where the logic of the microprocessor is burnt on the chip itself. That only allows certain modes of operation to exist and not others. So that thoroughly limits the insider threat from exercising what they want to do, because the chip just will not respond. I also call this non-network security. So just summarizing, the four levels are authentication, authorization, segmentation of networks, firewalling. That's all to do with confidentiality as the first layer. Signature-based intrusion detection as the second layer. Context-based intrusion detection that's protocol-specific as the third layer. And finally, these controls for edge security like damper resistance, hypervisor, and microprocessor security. When you do all four of those layers, it thoroughly discourages a hacker from attacking your critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Based on the criticality of the assets you're protecting, you make the appropriate investments in cybersecurity for those four layers, and you live life. So there's a tangible way of addressing cyber threats. Unfortunately, many of the networks today lack in one or more of these four layers. They obsess on edge security with the first layer and give free rein through the rest of the network and cause vulnerabilities. Or there isn't enough secure business processes in place such that even the best technology cannot secure. So there needs to be policy, business process, and technology all need to come together in organizations in order to protect. As an individual, the best you can do is share information on a need basis. Don't divulge information you don't need to give to someone. And if breached, have the appropriate methods of cleaning up your system so that the vulnerability is not ongoing.
Okay. One thing, I was curious where you would place this in your model, kind of the analysis of data points and, those, we'll say, edge node anomalies of lots of devices out there, or network monitoring of lots of devices, or even threat intelligence of lots of social threats and people coming in. Where do you put those type of kind of almost big data, artificial intelligence anomaly at?
the important thing to understand is real-time analysis and anomaly detection is best done at the edge where the local phenomena is happening. And the cloud and the big data kind of computing is better for determining risk profiles and trends and baselines and things like that. Because the real-time requirement, it makes it very difficult for cloud-type architectures to work to provide you information locally in the time scale you need in order to avoid catastrophic damage. So I would suggest a hybrid model where the local data, based on the use cases that are running, is used to do anomaly detection locally and mitigation, and use the cloud more for understanding correlated events and trending so that you can continually improve the cybersecurity controls.
Okay, let's take a break real quick. We'll be back to talk to Dr. Ibrahim in a minute after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier, broadcasting here from SecureSet Academy, who was nice enough to provide us with a great studio here that we can broadcast out of. Dr. Irfan Ibrahim, our guest today, going over some of his security models that were out in a very well-recommended publication that was a lot of interest in the energy sector. And I know Dr. Ibrahim is one of my personal mentors, is something I look up to myself. Dr. Ibrahim, we were talking about your model and about the four kind of tiers, and which is a very interesting approach. You know, I was curious, I have seen also just recently in an interest area of mine in blockchain, that there's a lot of energy blockchain consortiums and whatnot. And I know I saw your face on one of my recent inquiries into a particular group that seemed very promising. What do you think about kind of the, we'll say, the preemptive design in of containerizing security that's capable through blockchain and future apps with blockchain in these areas?
I think that blockchain has a place in transactions, especially when it's peer-to-peer and you don't have a centralized trust authority. You want to have some modicum of confidence that the data that you have is actually the data that was created and not fudged in any way. So in that sense, blockchain is valuable in doing those transactions between entities when you don't have that centralized authority. However, within an organization that is vertically integrated, to do a lot of internal transactions at millisecond level timescales, you may not have the luxury of using blockchain just because of the time it takes to converge. Mm-hmm. This is not a systems issue. It is more of an architectural issue. So my suggestion is that when you're dealing with external parties that are not at the same trust level as you, by all means, use blockchain. But when you are within your organization, then for our internal day-to-day operations, it's an overkill. You don't need that. This layered defense model works just as well. Mm-hmm. So it all depends on what your use case is as to where you will use blockchain and where you will not use blockchain. I think that the technology is well posed. The probability of compromising a blockchain ledger is very difficult. I have seen the presentations. I'm in fact hosting the Energy Blockchain Consortium webinars monthly, and we've had three of them already, and there's been a very strong interest in that space. So I support the technology, but I don't think it is needed everywhere.
Yeah, so you there's been a lot of buzz around it lately, so you're not a, hey, put it everywhere type of person, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was kind of looking at your model a little bit deeper, and I would put that kind of the blockchain as the governance and the business tier. But you also talk about business tier, where a lot of your first three categories that you talked about, when it's that defensive depth, were kind of a technological implementation and layers. How does that get wrapped into the, you know, your business operations? You know, obviously, if you're in critical infrastructure, a lot of the business applications are similar. But then if we're in other industries, they might be entirely different than even critical infrastructure. But how does that all wrap in?
So there's a logical flow from business to technology, not the other way around. And so first, what you have to do is whatever endeavor you're in, healthcare, telecom, financial services, energy, water, you have to first document your use cases, which are business level transactions.
Mm-hmm.
In that, what you want to do is document the actors who are going to perform the transaction, and in that you define the type of data, the amount of data, the frequency in which you will exchange the data, the latency that is allowed in the transaction. All of that needs to be documented first. So that's how you encapsulate your business process and prepare it for technology. Then you design a network that can support those use cases. And then you dress it up with the layered defense approach that I'm speaking of, and you've got the whole thing. So you start with business, define use cases that distills technology requirements, design the network, dress it up with security, and then you have the whole thing. If you try to embed security without a good grasp of what the use cases are, you're going to end up with a lot of timeouts on your business applications because of the overhead of cybersecurity that you've put on. Once you have the requirements from the use cases for the latency and for the throughput and all of those things, you make informed decisions on the technology, both from a network perspective and cyber perspective. So we always have to put the horse before the cart. The horse in this case is the business process.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something I would advocate as well. And a lot of us technologists, and even though I said I advocate it, I always think technology. And so often I catch myself in that space where I'm thinking the technology aspects. And I'm like, wait a minute, we have to go back and think about, do we even need this? How's it interface with the business, and what do we need to do? Now, if I asked you, You have some great approaches to organization, to kind of engineering, architecture, governance, looking at the corporate, the company and the organization. What do you see in everything you do as the major areas, problematic areas, that you almost always come along that you would say, you know, here's the areas to look out for. Here's my key points. Here's what I would give to you as your top concerns should be, this list.
The first is the lack of cyber governance is the first part, which basically means that the technology people in most enterprises today are speaking a different language than the business group. And if they did a proper cyber governance assessment relative to three major standards, the NIST cybersecurity framework, the Department of Energy cybersecurity capability maturity model, and the ISO IEC 27001, if you do those assessments relative to those standards, you can come on the same platform between technology people and business people. I would do that first at an organizational level, even before the documentation of the use cases, simply because in the absence of that, a lot of ad hoc stuff is happening. I have done something like 20 assessments to date using an automated software tool that I have access to. And the results have been phenomenal, that organizations that thought that they were at very mature levels of security turned out not to be, simply because while technologically they were very advanced, their business process security controls were not in place. So I would say that that's an area that is sorely lacking. The other area that's lacking is that organizations are working in silos where the networking and security people are not spending enough time with the business line managers to understand what their requirements are. And they think that somehow if they build a Tower of Babel with technology, that the business people just rally around it. Well, that's just not going to happen, because the business people are the ones generating the wealth. They're the final arbiter. So there needs to be better relationship between these three parties. And the third thing is that the cybersecurity community needs to understand that cybersecurity begins at the network and not at firewalls and not with Active Directory. And this way of thinking I find very myopic. Access control lists can provide a natural immunity in networks through proper segmentation and granular policies that if you wait till the firewall, it's too late. It's easy to compromise firewall. I have people who work for me who can reverse engineer the firmware on a firewall and put administrator rights on for themselves and do whatever they feel like. So what is a firewall? I mean, I don't even consider it a security appliance. It's cute. It allows you to do role-based access control. It basically directs legit people to go to legit places, but does not really address the sophisticated hacker who finds a vulnerability in the firmware and changes the logic. So we need to have cyber people and network people work together to build the cybersecurity posture and not be in silos. So those are some of the dysfunctionalities I have seen in enterprise that need to be addressed.
You know, a question, this is just what I see personally, is cybersecurity people, and there's lately we've been so adamant about certifications in cybersecurity. And if you go take a cybersecurity certification, which I hold some of, they are designed around technical domains, they call it. And that is thinking about things in how technical people group them. And all the security is in this domain, this type of security. And it seems like almost exact in opposition to what you're talking about. And that some of the way that the technical people are learning to learn and categorize security is opposite of how the business people see it, but this divide is almost widening because of a push towards technical people learn these technical practices in a technical way, and the business side people go to business school. Even when you look at the NIST NICE framework, it's different than the CISSP domains, which are more technical, and trying to bridge that gap almost needs a set terminology that links these two sides. What are your thoughts about how that comes together?
So the certification process is great for job security for the cyber community until a breach occurs. And then they start getting let go because they were responsible for the assets, but the certification only took them further down the path of silos. Mm-hmm. And did not give them the situational awareness that they needed to thwart the breach. But this is an issue. I have nothing against certification as long as management of organizations sees beyond certification and creates the right professional incentives for the cybersecurity community to work closely with network and business line people through bonuses, through promotions and things like that, mm-hmm. by recognizing a best practice. So certifications have their place in developing deep domain expertise in certain areas. There's nothing wrong with that. After all, we get advanced degrees and subjects, but that doesn't mean we just do that for the rest of our lives. So this is where the upper management of companies especially need to think about creating a proper incentive program for their employees that brings these groups together.
Yeah.
Today, I don't see too much of that.
And I agree with you on that one. So kind of in closing here, wrapping up, you offer consulting services to many high-level companies and utility companies. How can people get a hold of you, and what type of people should reach out to you that you can help them out with what you do?
You can reach out to me with erfan@tbblc.com. That's erfan@tbblc.com. It's the easiest way to reach me by email. I have a website, tbblc.com. You're welcome to visit that and see the services we offer. The best person to approach me is someone who is in a decision-making position for technology and is looking for objective views on the technologies they're considering. It could be a business line manager that's looking to do a cyber governance assessment of their department, or it could be at a COO level, someone who's interested in doing it organization-wide, or the IT director. I've worked with different people. And also policy people, especially from the public utility commissions, as well as other consulting groups that are working with utilities or with other enterprises that need deep or drill down into cybersecurity do's and don'ts. I am available for advisory services, implementation services, pen testing, architecture reviews, technology evaluations, and I have a team of about 15 people with top security clearances from intelligence and defense who have joined my team, and I can place them on site to do work in all of these areas. And okay. I also provide advisory services as needed.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Erfan, and you're definitely a anchor in this industry of cybersecurity that I look up to in many ways. So thanks again for joining. You have a great day.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye. The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.